Good morning, Your Honors. First of all, may it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Rodriguez on behalf of petitioner Lorena Espinosa, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
There are two issues that I would like to discuss today. The first is whether prior counsel acted ineffectively when he in error conceded that petitioner did not meet the 7-year continuous residence requirement for purposes of the INA section 240AA. And second, whether such ineffective assistance prejudiced petitioner and that it may have affected the outcome of proceedings. As to the first issue, the lower courts and DHS argue that at the time of petitioner's removal hearing, there was no reason counsel should have made the argument or would have known to make the argument reasonably that she met the 7-year continuous resident requirement and this is simply not true.
Counsel, can I ask you one question? Did you present in this record any record of what actually happened at the 1997 hearing? Was there a transcript of that? There's some reference to listening to tapes.
There was tapes that were listened to, but there was not a transcript because petitioner never had the opportunity to appeal. I believe that was conceded at that hearing. That was waived.
How do you know that the attorney conceded that there was no cancellation of removal based on the 7-year requirement as opposed to the 5-year requirement for legal permanent residence? You had to meet both of those, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
How did you meet the 5-year requirement? That wasn't met, correct?
The 5-year was... So she became a legal permanent resident in 1993, and then her NTA was filed October of 1997. So
that's 4 years, right?
That's 4 years, but what we're arguing today is that her time as a temporary legal permanent resident would have counted.
But no, they're two. Aren't they two separate requirements? The 7-year and the 5-year. You have to meet both of them, correct?
Yes.
And she didn't meet both of them, correct?
Well, we're arguing that she did meet the 7-year requirement, and I have here that she became a legal permanent resident March 5th of 1993.
So she didn't meet the 5-year?
Not based on what I have, no.
So how... Why was a concession by counsel that she wasn't entitled to cancellation of removal? Why was that concession error? It appears that she wasn't.
Well, I think the issue that we're really honing into today, Your Honor, is a 7-year requirements, and that counsel conceded that the 7 years was not met. And based on that specific reason, the immigration judge did not go through the process of being able to analyze whether she was eligible for discretionary relief.
But as a matter of fact, she wasn't eligible. If he was wrong about the 7 years, and he may well have been wrong about the 7 years, there's no prejudice because of the 5-year. She obviously didn't meet the 5-year requirement. And since you don't have a record of the proceeding, how do you know that specifically he was saying she didn't meet the, agreeing she didn't meet the 7 years as opposed to agreeing that she didn't meet the 5 years? How do you know?
Based on what she told us, based on what she talked about with her attorney, from what she could remember in her dealings with him.
I've got a related question. This is Judge Fletcher. On pages 10 and 11 of your brief, you state that she became an LPR, lawful permanent resident, in August of 1991. Now, if that were true, she satisfied the 5 years. What's the basis for the statement in your brief that she became an LPR in August of 91?
Actually, let me pull up the record of proceedings, Your Honor. If we look at the NTA, I think that will give us the answer of that. I may have written it wrong in my notes here.
Seems to me, while you're looking, I'll just say that Judge Ammon has it right, and you had it right when you initially stated that she became an LPR in March of 93. That's what the said, and there's material on the record that says that that's so. But I'd be interested if there's other evidence that actually supports the August 91 date. But but there's no reference in the brief to any evidence that supports that statement.
Yeah, unfortunately, our evidence was very limited because of the time that had passed, and also, again, because respondent never appealed. Again, that was waived, so we didn't have a transcript of any of that. The only thing we do have is the NTA and the I-213. We also don't have any documents which specifically... say the contrary, unfortunately.
Well, in your brief on page 2, you say that it was later adjusted to lawful permanent resident on March 5th, 1993, and you cite certified administrative records. So I thought you were actually conceding that it was March 1st of 1993, or March 5th. I didn't think that was now a disputed issue.
No, so I would go with what my brief said, Your Honor. I have here that she
brief said where
entered temporary legal resident in 89. That's what I have here on the brief. Temporary legal resident in 89, and then 2 years later she would have adjusted her status. So that would make it 91.
No, but you said 93 in your brief.
You said both things. You said 93.
Yeah. And 91. Right.
I do apologize. Unfortunately, I didn't catch that, and I didn't personally write the brief.
You know what? Let's hear from the government, and you may be able to do a little research or at least sort of recover your thoughts while we're hearing from the government.
Yes, thank you. Sorry about that, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Roseanne Perry on behalf of the Attorney General. The agency properly exercises broad discretion in denying petitioner's untimely motion to reopen. Petitioner failed to demonstrate prejudice from her former counsel's performance, warranting equitable tolling of the time limit on her motion to reopen. The record establishes that petitioner did not have a claim for cancellation of removal at the time of her 1997 merits hearing. Demonstrate eligibility for cancellation of removal, she was required to show in part that she had resided in the United States continuously for 7 years after having been admitted. As the record shows, petitioner's continuous presence was 4 years, as it began on March 3, 1993, when she became a legal permanent resident, and ended with the service of the NTA on June 25, 1997.
Are you talking about the 7 year requirement didn't begin until 1993? Are you saying that?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But the statute itself, 240A, says you count any status. And
well,
temporary residence was a status. So she had met the 7 year requirement, had she not?
Not at that time, because the board hadn't said that temporary legal residence could count towards the 7 years of continuous presence until 1999.
Well, but forget what the board said. The statute refers to the phrase having been here in any status. Any status would be temporary resident status, and Perez just confirmed that. But I mean, it seems obvious reading it that was she met the 7 year requirement. It appears she didn't meet the 5 year requirement, which I don't believe that you emphasized in your papers.
No, we didn't discuss that because the agency didn't discuss it.
Can I interrupt, but on this same point, given that the agency talks only about the 7 years, and the agency doesn't talk about the 5 years, are we to assume that the only basis upon which the denial was made was the failure to satisfy 7, and therefore we assume that 5 was satisfied? I mean, the facts don't bear it out, but there's nothing in the agency decision that relies on that.
No, if the court believes that that she did satisfy the 7 years, the case would need to be remanded to the court so that the agency can consider whether she met the 5-year requirement.
So why do we have to remand? The agency had every opportunity to get this right. It just didn't do it. So they get a do-over?
Well, they have to. They would need to get a chance. The court couldn't decide it in the first instance that she met the 5-year requirement when the agency hasn't had a chance.
Even though it was right there in front of the BIA, and they just didn't say a word about it. Instead, they go off on their 7 years, which, and I agree with Judge Hammond, that's a highly questionable conclusion given the word in the statute that says in the status.
But the agency did say there has to be a showing of prejudice, correct?
Correct.
And there's what is your argument with respect to prejudice?
Well, the former counsel made a reasonable determination that she was not, that she did not satisfy the 7 years, considering that at that time, temporary legal residence wasn't counted towards the 7-year requirement.
Well, the IJ who decided this most recently was also the same IJ who presided over her hearing in 97. Is that correct?
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Well, he talks about, in his opinion, he says, he talks about the hearing that they had, and he said, based on the test, this is at page 4 of the opinion, based upon the testimony and evidence admitted, I found that the respondent was excludable as charged, and then goes on to say, the eligibility for cancellation of removal certainly would not have changed the outcome of that decision. Doesn't that mean that there was then no prejudice?
I believe so.
You didn't make that argument. You didn't make that argument in your brief, I don't think, but
no, it
seems like if the ALJ is saying, I wouldn't have, based on what I heard at the hearing, I still wouldn't have granted her cancellation of removal, which I guess is discretionary, correct?
Correct.
Based on what I heard at the hearing. So why isn't there no prejudice? That's what that the IJ does say that.
Did you waive that argument?
We did not discuss that issue in the brief, no.
You know, everywhere I look, there are missed arguments. This is one of the worst done cases I've ever seen in my whole life. I've been doing this for a long time. So,
I'm not sure what to say.
Is your only argument based upon the fact that she doesn't satisfy the 7 years? Because if that's your argument, if that's your only argument, you lose.
Well, she still didn't show due diligence.
Due diligence can be shown if there was ineffective assistance of counsel and she didn't understand it. And when she finally realizes what the problem is, then she comes forward. She may very well have due diligence. That's a plausible, but in my view, a relatively weak argument.
I guess she just, I don't believe that she exercised due diligence because she waited 16 years to bring and file her motion to reopen.
And at what point does she realize that her lawyer made a mistake?
I believe it was 16 years later after, you know, she waited for, you know, 16 years to bring it to another lawyer to find out whether she could have relief.
Did you make a due diligence argument?
No, I didn't because the board didn't make that decision. Although the IJ found that equitable tolling wasn't warranted, the board did not consider that issue.
Does both the board, both have to consider the issue?
Yes, the board needs to. The board didn't consider the issue, though.
So the board wrote mare verbatim, meaning incorporated the reasoning of the IJ. Sounds as though we've managed to stump both of you.
Yes, that's true. They did cite matter of Verbano. But the government would argue that there's still no prejudice on the part of the former counsel, so because she did not show 7 years of continuous presence.
Let me ask you, did you make efforts to listen to the recording so to determine what the evidence was in 1997?
No, we did not have the transcripts of the case because she did not appeal the decision that she was not eligible for cancellation of removal.
So that means that there is no transcript that's available?
I believe so, yes.
Well, counsel made reference to tape recordings, or do they keep tape recordings?
I'm not sure about that, Your Honor.
They make tape recordings. Whether they've been retained is another question, but they make tape recordings.
I mean, I don't know that we're even sure that the basis of the concession was the 7 years. I'm not sure. I guess maybe the plaintiff says that was her understanding, but we don't have a record to really know precisely what the basis of the concession was, because had the concession been the 5 years, it would have been obviously an appropriate concession.
I'm not sure if we can get a transcript of the proceeding. That's something that I would have to ask.
Well, your time has expired. There are no further questions from the bench, and if you have nothing further, we'll move to rebuttal. Do you have anything further?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
Any further questions from the bench?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Let's hear from rebuttal, please.
excuse me. As to the tape recordings, Your Honor, there is a declaration from primary counsel, Murray Hiltz, that states that he did review the tapes, and he did make the determination in listening to those tapes that the concession was to the 7 years.
Does he say that in his affidavit, that the concession was to the 7 years?
He doesn't specifically say that, but that is the whole purpose of his briefing as to the 7 years and why he believes there was ineffective assistance of counsel. And throughout the lower courts, that's what has really been at issue. And I do apologize to the court that perhaps we didn't catch 91 versus 93. We just don't have a something specifically, either an LPR card, old LPR card, that says that or not. I would note that, like the court said, the government did not make an argument of due diligence in its briefing. And I would agree with the courts that if there was an effective assistance to the 7-year concession, then she would have been prejudiced and that the lower courts did waive the, oh, did you have a question?
Yeah. No, please go ahead. Sorry.
That they did waive that, that argument. And further, I believe in the immigration judge decision and also in the BIA in affirming that decision, I believe that the reasoning behind them finding that they would have not found in favor of petitioner or under discretion, they specifically state on there that they were looking at zealous advocacy, and that the petitioner did have an opportunity to present her case. But I would note that that zealous advocacy, if there was any, is thwarted by the counsel's lack of knowledge as to the 7-year concession.
But no, what the judge goes on to say, though, he's not saying that there wasn't ineffective assistance because he did such a good job at the hearing. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that after having heard the hearing testimony, that her eligibility for cancellation of removal would not have changed the outcome. That's a prejudice argument. The fact that he's not saying, oh, it wasn't ineffective because he was so good at the hearing. That's not what the judge was saying.
I understand that, but it was specifically, that's the only thing that the immigration judge specifically notes. And had there been a different finding in regards to the 5-year requirement, I would say that the lower courts would have had to address that or had the opportunity to address that.
Well, the immigration judge does find, though, that March 3rd, 1993 was the date that she became an LPR. So that is fixed in his opinion.
I did see that part now, Your Honor, yes.
It's on page 4.
Yes, I did. I did see that. I checked into it.
Did you write the brief, or are you just coming for argument?
No, I'm just coming for argument, Your Honor.
You know, would you please tell Mr. Schiltz that if he's going to write a brief like this, he better come and defend it himself?
I will. I will do so. Thank you.
Any further questions from the bench?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. The case of Lopez Espinoza versus Barr is now submitted for decision.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.